Hi, I'm Fred Williams, and if you enjoy Real Science Radio, please check out Colorado Right to Life. You can find them online at crtl.org. That's crtl.org. They've been fighting against abortion without compromise for the last 50 years. Now, with the fall of Roe, they need your help more than ever. Join them in the fight against abortion right here in Colorado. That's crtl.org. Again, that's crtl.org.
The abandonment of the concept of a medium in space is perhaps the greatest mistake of physics in this century.
Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune into Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Keeping it real.
Welcome back to Real Science Radio. We are continuing and wrapping up our discussion with Dr. Clifford Denton and Dr. Pete Moore about the famous Michelson-Morley experiment and the assumptions behind Einstein's theory of relativity. In the first two parts of this conversation, Dr. Denton, a former Royal Air Force pilot who earned his PhD from Oxford, walked us through the background of his research and then presented the mathematical argument that he developed with his colleague Francis Pym. Their work shows that the constant measured speed of light and the results of experiments like Michelson-Morley can be explained without making time itself relative. Hence, the effects Einstein attributed to changing time may actually be due to physical changes in clocks and measuring instruments as they move through the structure of space. Now, the Michelson-Morley experiment didn't just test light in the direction of motion. It also tested light traveling at a right angle to that motion. So in this final part of our discussion, Dr. Denton addresses that transverse direction, and we'll bring back Dr. Pete Moore into the conversation to talk about how these ideas connect with Professor Simhoni's EPOLA model. So let's jump back into that discussion.
The speed of light is not constant. If you're moving, you're moving with the light or against it. So that actually affects how light is moving in relation to yourself. But you'll always get the same measurement C because of this reason. So you have to analyze it, allowing for the variables of reduced time and length. But you don't know that when you're moving. Now, it all comes out in the equations, but obviously trying to put them through quickly, a mist occurs. And that was the mist that disappeared from my head in that day, on that day when I could do the equations in my head. Because it's all about who's measuring what and can you really believe it? So we've laid it down that you can see the calculations, but the broad, simple logic is there. We could have stated that simple logic without explanation, then you'd have to say, that sounds like a good idea. But in fact, you can show it mathematically. Yeah. So we have clear evidence of why Einstein, though he didn't, for some reason, he didn't see it. That great mind didn't, if he saw it, he didn't tell anybody. He didn't see this. But it's as simple as some school algebra to show it, if your mind is clear enough. But based on this, we can go back to absolutes. We can say that Einstein, we doubt your axioms because they lead to some things which are totally illogical. But let's go back and think about an absolute term and explain why you got the results you did. But now let's go back to absolutes because we'll end up exploring truth rather than distorting truth into some model of the universe which doesn't really exist. So best thing is to go through the equations for yourself and realize that it's as simple as making a two-way passage of light measurement and finding the speed of that two-way passage, and you'll always find the same answer however you're moving. That is just the simple conclusion.
Yeah, you'll always find C, the speed of light. So the Michelson-Morley experiment, based on this, they should have known that they're going to find the speed of light, C.
And you would have thought they'd see it. They weren't deaf. They were good scientists.
They were deaf. That brings us back to one thing you said earlier that got my attention. It's as if it were a spiritual deception. It's hard to believe Einstein didn't see this.
It is. I'm sure that, like you, Doug, there'll be listeners and those who are looking at the first time and think, oh, you've lost me.
Oh, yeah.
That's the natural conclusion. But the fact is, it is easy to follow the logic. I think you need to pray before you read the paper. But the logic is as simple as high school maths.
Yeah.
You know, when I first looked at your math several weeks ago, I realized that when you have an observer with one velocity and you put it into your math, eventually velocity cancels out and you still get C. So you can put in half the speed of light and you go through these equations, they cancel out and you still get C. No matter what you do, velocity kind of cancels itself out in these equations and tells you that the observer is going to be shocked, but it always gets to be C.
Yeah.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. let me read Genesis chapter 1, verse 1. I'm sure many of us are familiar with that. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth and time. Oh, wait, that last part isn't in there. But yet, there's a lot of creationists who believe that God created time itself as a material thing on day one. God created the heavens and the earth, and you'll also see time in there. So there is the spiritual element, in my opinion, of Einstein that somehow made it popular that with time is relative, that God in fact created time itself just by that, creating the heavens and the earth. So I always objected to seeing the word time in there because it's not in the Bible. I just checked.
He put the sun in the sky and said that's going to be a measurement of time.
He did.
This is the creator who determined how we measure time.
Exactly.
He didn't necessarily want us to fine-tune it down to milliseconds and so on. We're dabbling with things in fine-tune that maybe we're supposed to live simpler lives. I don't know. But this is where we are.
I like that. And Dr. Denton, I might be able to follow it, but I'm no Einstein. So Einstein should have been able to follow this.
Yeah. If you go over it, I mean, I've been a bit quick with equations, but if you go over it, it's simple maths. But yet what has come out of it is the most complicated view of the universe. And even some of the best creationists, particularly when they're looking at starlight and time, there are books written on that in creationist view. They will accept the special theory of relativity in their appraisal of the passage of light from the stars and try to explain the 6 days of creation incorporating relativistic thinking. I think it's all got to be ditched. Go back to the absolutes and you'll find, because this comes out and gives this result, it's only a contribution. It's not the whole story. So contribution to results says, have confidence to go back to the absolutes and build the picture again, if you need to. I just think God will show us so much, but he won't show us everything. And maybe he wants to show us some more because there are those who are still deluded who is better if they're not his own people, actually. So I think there's some more to be done. And little works like this are some encouragements to go forward in absolute terms rather than relativistic. People will have to rewrite their books. If they got humility, they will, with joy. But if they hold on with pride, they'll still believe a lie and stick to it. Wonder that those who are given to teaching in the body of believers have got such a great responsibility. You either teach people the truth or you mislead them into error. It's a massive responsibility. So I hope with humility we can begin to make the case for relooking at it more broadly.
Okay, Dr. Denton, you had done the analysis based on the direction of travel and things shortening and a clock slowing. But one of your readers of the Journal of Creation wrote a letter to you indicating, but you didn't do what Michelson Morley did as far as you didn't add the transverse direction in the other 90-degree direction. And he wrote a letter to you in the next Journal of Creation volume. Would you like to address what he did as far as the transverse direction?
Yeah, that is true. Thank you. For this paper, we had looked at this too, but for this paper, we just wanted to look at the velocity of light as we've described a two-way travel and the result you get. That was sufficient for the paper. But yes, and it was very encouraging that one of the readers then wrote in and said, well, what about light that is going at right angles to the direction of motion? Because after all, the Michelson-Morley experiment was to do with a ray of light split in two directions and then recombining. So Richard Ward, wrote in, and I think that's really very encouraging for a number of ways. Number one, he'd understood the article. Number two, he was clear thinking to write in. And number three, in a way, that other people must get involved. It's good that if this sparks off interest. So Richard's was very, very encouraging. And so it was put in as a letter in the following journal. It's just worth looking at the next diagram, which explains roughly his logic. We can look at the maths, but perhaps we leave that for another time. But what he realized is, if a ray of light was shining vertically from the direction of motion, then really that light ray was not going vertically up and down as it seems to be when you're moving with it, but in fact it's going diagonally. The light goes up to the reflector, but it has to go diagonally and then come down diagonally because we're all moving. And so he did a calculation based on that, realizing that length contraction was not relevant in the vertical because there's no motion relative to the ether vertically, and yet time dilation was. And his calculation was based on Pythagoras' theorem, that's all. And he ends up with the same result, that if you shoot off a light at right angles to the direction of motion, guess what? You get the same answer every time too. Whether it's in the direction of travel or at right angles, the light comes back. You feel at an average speed of C. You'll always get the same measurement. So he contributed that. And there's a little bit of the maths to get you there.
So ultimately, he comes up with C also.
Yep. He comes up with C for the right angle beam of light.
Yep. And, you know, it looks like it's not complicated maths. Yeah. And you know, I recognize that, you know, the Lorentz equation in here. And Lorentz, he thought there was an ether, right? He was an absolute time guy, if I'm not mistaken.
I think, as I say, that I hope if people just spend some time going over the maths, convince themselves it's valid, as the peer reviewers did for the journal, we then rethink about absolutes and we get on with it. We look at things that Dr. Moore is looking at and maybe others, and you end up with a new phase of investigating the universe on absolutes again. That's what we're proposing.
Also, Dr. Denton, it looks like Mr. Ward, his equations do something very similar to yours, because what you see as you get the development going, the velocity of the observer finally just cancels out completely. And that allows it then to completely collapse down to C. So his conclusion at the end is the same as yours, is that any moving observer, even if you're looking in a transverse direction, all of that observer movement cancels out. And what he really sees is he just sees the apparent speed of C every time.
Yeah.
So he just confirmed the other experiment that Michelson-Morley had. They had the transverse in addition to the one forward, right?
Correct.
Yep. Okay.
Okay, and so this is the elegance that I was, even though someone like me can't understand the maths, we have to trust people like you to understand the maths. And by the way, we've done that for Einstein. So I'm totally comfortable doing that with you, because I know there are other people who know the math who are going to check your math and it better end up being elegant. And Einsteinian relativity has never struck me as elegant.
Yeah.
Yep.
I think that the creationist, Christian creationist world has got more mature over the last couple of decades or so. To have a journal like the Journal of Creation, which is peer-reviewed, to, as you say, check the maths. And if you look at most of those articles, most of us will say, I can't follow it, because you're dipping into a field that you haven't got any foundations in. People are talking about things that I hadn't even started on. But as a group of people, if we can trust one another and check one another, we can contribute more together than we can alone.
This episode of Real Science Radio was brought to you by Door County Coffee. A few years ago, one of the friends I watched football with on Sunday turned me on to this coffee, and I have to admit, it may have been the best thing he ever contributed to the group. Now, if you love great coffee like I do, you've got to check them out. Some of my favorites are Chocolate Raspberry Truffle, which blends rich dark chocolate with fresh raspberry flavor, Highlander Grog, which I believe is their most popular coffee, and then Turtles in a Cup, which my wife and I just love, and we've already started this bag. It tastes like chocolate, caramel, and toasted pecans all in one mug. So if you want to upgrade your morning coffee or your afternoon coffee, or let's be honest, your evening coffee, head over to DoorCountyCoffee.com and grab a bag or two.
Absolutely. Okay, so Dr. Moore, I'd like to hear your take on what Dr. Denton just went through, which is really kind of, you know, he's confirming that time is not relative, it's absolute. And now how does this play into the model that you've presented on Epola from Professor Simone, and how this all ties together? Do you have any issues with Dr. Denton's work?
No, actually, he has a scenario. This scenario that he has presented, including the transverse direction, you might call it the scenario where the Lorentz factor works. Slowing a clock, actually slowing the clock and slowing and shortening distances using the Lorentz factor. So I call that scenario the full Lorentz. There's another assumption you can make that will also work, and that's the half Lorentz. And then you can do the equations there. And I'll kind of go through that as we go through my slides. First of all, Dr. Denton postulates that there is an ether. Now, in his paper, his paper is not written to identify what it's made of or its internal structure, but he just says there is an ether. And if there is, then the ether can be the mechanism of reaction to things moving through it, whether it's the clock or whether it's a yardstick that's going to be used for measuring. So that was the first thing. He gets us to an ether. And he's in good company by assuming there is an ether. Newton, Maxwell, Michelson, Lorentz, Tesla, Einstein, Thomas Barnes, and Simone all do this. So if they can do it, Dr. Denton can do it. He's in good company. The fact is, there most likely is an ether. He has proven that the Lorentz factor works perfectly, but it's only here in this particular presentation if it's assumed that the movement through the ether mechanically slows the time clock and shortens material objects like the yardstick.
Yeah.
So if those two things are assumed, which you can, then all of this will say, then the observer will, his velocity through the ether will cancel, and you're always going to get C. So that's his conclusion, is that it doesn't matter what the velocity of the observer is. You should expect it to always result in measuring a constant speed of light.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to say we need to go back and remember again, Newton warned us, don't confuse time with measured time. And so Dr. Denton has straightened that out. He's gone back to absolutes. Because if you're sloppy with your language, you get unusual and purely mathematical, and they do strain the sacred writings. But you know, Tesla said almost the same thing. He said, today, scientists have substituted mathematics for experiments, and they've wandered off through equation after equation, and eventually they built a structure which has no relation to reality. So again, another warning about being too mathematical and not fixing things to absolutes.
Yep.
Another man we want to remember that gave us some warning, and we do well to remember that, is Dr. Thomas Barnes, a creationist. He's now deceased. But in his book, Space Medium, he actually said, I'm going to take a stab at what is the ether, and or at least how would it work? And so he, in his book, Space Medium, Key to the Unified Physics, on page 9, he says, this is one of his conclusions, the abandonment of the concept of a medium in space is perhaps the greatest mistake of physics in this century. I just wished more creationists would read his work and consider his warning here.
Yeah, that's Dr. Thomas Barnes. And wasn't he the president of the Creation Research Society, if I remember?
At one time, yes.
Yep.
Yes, he was.
Yeah, so again, he says the abandonment of the concept of a medium, the ether.
That's right.
In space is perhaps the greatest mistake of physics. Boy, we couldn't agree more.
Now, there are additional comments that I have. You could do an alternate scenario, which I call the half Lorenz, and that is the MMX experiment did not measure the speed of light. They did not actually measure, have a clock and measure time. Those mostly were the, when you do the equations, you assume time and you assume a constant speed. But they did measure the arm lengths, the distances. And they did it in two directions. Thus, if link contraction in the direction of travel alone, let's suppose that the clocks are okay, they don't get affected. If they don't, and only the length contraction is going to control our perception, then that would have a new factor, a gamma that's we have to calculate. Now, when I did this to see if the clocks are okay, what kind of a gamma would you have? Amazingly, I got the same gamma as the Lorenz gamma. Now, it took a lot of algebra to get to that point, and so I'm going to tag this right now, preliminary, because the ink's still drying on the paper that I did just day before yesterday. I was not expecting this. I thought, when I take the clock out of it and do just length, it's, well, what happens is the clock cancels itself. When you take it out, the parts of the clock cancel out, and you're just left with length. But the length works if you use that gamma. Then with this gamma, things work again, and you would expect then to get a constant value of C if you're the observer. Then there's a third alternative, and that's the one where we have the clock is considered not slowed, and the length is not contracted. How would you then, if you say, no, the links in the clock, they don't really do that. Well, that's an assumption. If they didn't do that, then how could you explain the Michelson-Morley experiment? And that's where we turn to Peter Beckman, who said, you know, if that's the case, then the proposed gravitational field ether, it's this ether that's distorted by the mass of the Earth, and it's following the Earth because the Earth creates it, and it follows with the Earth. So that particular ether is standing still with respect to the Earth. It's dragging along with the Earth. And then when you do the Michelson-Morley, it's like you're standing still. And that's the other one. So all of these scenarios come up with the fact that it's expected that these things would happen. However, we have now explained this mechanically in absolute measurements rather than resorting to the strange unproven declaration that time itself slowed down. So here's three scenarios. Dr. Denton has done a really masterful job to bring this to our attention, and Mr. Ward helped him and just completed that. But there are other scenarios that also would lead to that. The question is now, which one of those is the right one? Well, that's where future experiments about the ether might very well tell us and finally point to, oh, this is the one that's really working, or it's this one over here. Does the ether really slow a clock? If it slows a clock, like a cesium clock, which is the vibrations of electrons that are dropping from a higher energy level down to the lower and back and forth, and they do that at a certain frequency. versus a mechanical clock that you wind up. Will the ether slow it down too? We don't know. Have you done the experiment? No. Maybe in the future we could.
Yep.
But to do those experiments, you somewhere have to start saying, I think there's an ether. As long as we keep saying there is no ether, why would you do the experiment? So I think that's kind of where I'm coming from.
Well, the professor Eason, if I have his name right, he's the inventor of the atomic clock. Yeah,
that's correct.
He thought that, you know, that he didn't believe in time as relative. And he opposed some of the experiments they were doing with clocks, you know, flying in airplanes and this and that, and how motion can affect the clock itself, not time itself.
Now, there are different models of the ether. Thomas Barnes took a stab at one. I liked Simhoni's because in addition to just talking about something that might be, he said, this one, I can even prove what it's made of. And then when he identified what it's made of, I said, oh, you can put math on that because those are electrical attractions of electron to a positron. That's electromagnetic and attraction math that is well known. So dive in, and then we found that it then meets the rigorous criteria for a natural physics ether model. So just what we did even in the last one, there are a number of things that a rigorous model would do, and I'm just kind of putting them on the screen. We talked about that in the last one, so I'm not going to go into detail. Yeah, so
again, you can go back to the videos we have last summer on special relativity and the replacement video, the second video, the replacement for Einstein's relativity. We have a lot of good details there.
So I just will point out, I mean, it too gets E equals MC squared. It gets the speed of light. Why does light go that speed? So it gets all of that. It does all of these. And then here's the 12th one. It should be able to explain or predict the gravitational constant. Well, out of these 12, the only one that has not yet been completed is that number one. No one has actually derived why the gravitational constant is the particular number that it is. In fact, on one of the internet YouTubes, the scientist said, this right now is the greatest mystery in all of physics. It's the one low-hanging fruit, and we don't seem to be able to get it.
Yeah, and if we get the EPOLA model to crank out this constant G, that would be a huge accomplishment. In fact, Real Science Radio, we're offering $10,000 to somebody who can figure this out and do the math. I know you're working on it, Dr. Moore.
I have, and since we had our last one, I have made really good progress on that derivation. I haven't finished it. We're hoping others will get into it, and that using, since it can do all of the others, I suspect we're on the right track, and it's just a matter of time now where someone sees the math in the EPOLA model, and out pops G, just like he the speed of light popped out, E equals MC squared popped out, the Planck constant number pops out. All of those things come right out of the EPOLA just naturally with algebra. I think this one will too.
Okay. And just as a reminder, we had a PhD scientist, I believe from Houston, that did a separate independent analysis of this model. And his math, we mentioned earlier, comes up with the same spacing between the
lattice spacing.
Spacing.
Yeah. And he was, again, just using the physics of electrostatic attraction. That's so simple. It's so known. He said, well, let's start with those and take them at infinity and let these two particles come together. How much work, how much energy is done, how much energy actually comes out. And he proved that those particles don't annihilate, which would be a zero distance apart. They actually hold off at 4.4 times 10 to the minus 15th. Meters.
And there's a growing science with electromagnetism, and it's in the universe, and this plays right into that. So there's a lot of things we still have to figure out. A lot of things are coming together. Dr. Denton, we really appreciate you coming on the show to explain how you came to your conclusion that time is absolute, and how the maths actually show it always flushes out C, the speed of light. And if you know, you remove a lot, you don't have to do these weird things with time as relative. You know, time was the hero of the plot for Einstein. You know, evolutionists like to say time's the hero of the plot. Well, they tried to get time to be the hero of the plot of what they were trying to pull off. And the secular world really loves this whole idea of relative time. And in my opinion, you can't find it. I read Genesis 1:1 earlier. You can't find where God created time as some material thing. Einstein was a materialist. And anyways, so, wow. Just great having both of you on the show to go through this stuff. Fantastic.
Absolutely. And gentlemen, I just want to make the point, what I've gotten out of this is we have more than the two or three witnesses required by the biblical model, by the biblical instruction, that we should confidently move forward that there is an ether. And too many people are, the reason they won't is for fear of being called a fool, for fear of being laughed at, for fear of being ridiculed from the ivory towers. And we are instructed to become fools for the sake of Christ. This is foolishness to the world. The things of the Spirit are foolishness to the world. So if they're laughing at you, don't be afraid of that. Take that as an indication that you're probably moving in the right direction. And Dr. Denton, you explained... you recounted how these equations came to your mind so clearly. In listening to you, I can tell that that's the Holy Spirit. The movement of the Holy Spirit today, I'm convinced, is a clarity of mind that results from regular conversation with God by His Word and by prayer and by the Holy Spirit. And that will give you a clarity of mind that people who don't have that are not capable of. And I just thank God for it. And Dr. Moore, Dr. Denton, I thank God that He's using you, and just pray for you to continue, and pray for this to help other people come to know God the way you do, the way I do, and to love Him and to have a relationship with Him. Thank you. God bless you.
Thank you.
All righty. So for Dr. Pete Moore and Dr. Clifford Denton, and my co-host Doug McBurney, I'm Fred Williams of Real Science Radio. May God bless you.